I'm Ken MacLeod. From the day we launched unfetteredmind.org, it has operated without a paywall, advertising, or a subscription charge. This is only possible through the generosity of people like you. If you find our materials useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind, Mind Training, Santa Fe Retreat, Part 15.
Here in the center, which picks up, because it resonates from the floor, picks up everything. So if you drop a piece of paper or squirm on your mat or do something like this, it goes right on. Yeah, just like that. No, it works by, it picks everybody up in the room because it uses the floor as a sounding board. Yes, you put on the pillow, wouldn't hear a thing. So anyway, and because this is mainly a question and answer period, George thought that this might be an interesting experiment. Anyway, so where should we start? Rebecca?
I was curious about Shikhtati Lodrugyatso. Could you tell us what that means?
Lodrugyatso means ocean of intelligence. And it was the Bodhisattva name that Kala Rinpoche gave to me when I asked him for the Bodhisattva vow in the lineage of vast action. In the profound meaning lineage, you don't usually pursue the Bodhisattva name, but you do in the lineage of vast action.
So that's what you're saying?
Not the same as Rinpoche. In Tibetan, you end up with a name for everything, so you have your, I can tell this little joke too, you have the refuge name, and if you take ordination as a monk, you get a monk's name, and when you take Bodhisattva vows, you get a Bodhisattva name, and if you take Vajrayana vows, you get a Vajrayana name, and you might get two or three of those, and then get certainly your root guru gives you one, and then if you do other branches of study like a geisha or a kempo or a grammarian or something like that, or astrologer or things like that, also consul has at least five. Oh, yes, if you're a teretan, you have another name for that. But there's a wonderful story about Pastor Rinpoche, who is a 19th century teacher, and one time in his life, he moved into a new valley and started to meditate in the cave. And the villagers just found him wonderful. Kept going to see him, brought him lots of offerings. He was in the Nyingma tradition, basically. And the local Gelugpa monastery was getting a little upset about this because they thought their economic base was being endangered. So some of the bright young magicians, which the Gelugpa tradition is renowned, thought they would go and have a debate on the Rinpoche. The older monks and the monastery said, maybe not such a good idea. Anyway, they didn't listen. So this big occasion was happening, and all the villagers crowded around. And at this point, this is the 19th century, by this point, the Gelugpa magicians had worked out every conceivable argument to defeat every school of Buddhism in Tibet. And all that mattered was you just had to identify the school in which this person was, and they knew exactly which argument to come up with. So, they started off the debate. And, who is your lama? Which would have immediately identified the Hatha school. And the Hatha said, Lord Buddha. that didn't give them very much to go on. So they tried again. In whom do you take refuge? Which would normally have elicited the name of his teacher again. The three jewels. And they tried one ploy after another, but the hospital just kept coming back with these basic lies. So finally, in desperation, it said, what is your secret name? Which is the name you'd be given for Vajrayana vow, for Vajrayana initiation. And this is really quite inappropriate to ask a teacher, to ask anyone, because the name is actually secret. Now, the name is in Tibetan is Tong Tsen, which also means secret mark. That would mean secret name. And without any hesitation, that part of the object lifted up his robe. Because the secret mark also means penis. The honor of penis. And the villagers collapsed in that. That was the end of the debate. Next question. Lodur Gyatso. Or Gyatso. Gyatso. Depending on what that is.
You made a connection between relative and ultimate and total and shared experience and then withdrew it. I wonder if you have more thoughts on that.
I haven't really had time to think that through. There's something there that I need to report to. Sorry, I can't give you any more on that right now. I do find distinguishing between shared and complete experience for the two worlds very helpful, because you know what you're dealing with there. Are you dealing with how to interact with projections and concepts and all of the stuff that goes with them, everybody else's? See, when you have a concept like a book, you not only have to deal with what you mean by book, but with what everybody else means by book, which is not the same when you're dealing with what is actually your own experience. That one can't be exchanged for crazy that shows with everybody else. But does this correspond with what is ultimately true and what is relatively true? No, because what arises from experience, like thoughts, feelings, and sensations, those are appearances. And when we're in confusion, we feel that they are true. And one of the things you were talking about last night, connection with truth, the trouble is I believe my feelings. So that initial correspondence that I was playing with doesn't hold. So I'm just going to look it up. Anita. Something arises in experience, a thought, feeling, and you put attention on it, and it appears to disappear. Experience that appears to disappear. And one's a little more present right there. And what one's done, in effect, is transformed the energy in that experience upwards into attention. That's why it appears to disappear. Okay? But that doesn't mean that the driving force behind that reactive process is being dismantled. You keep doing this, and eventually you start in those moments where it appears to disappear and you're resting open, you're going to sense another emotion, another process. And now you're going to do the same thing with that. And in this way, attention penetrates the deeper, deeper levels. And it penetrates the deeper levels. Each one of those levels is dismantled. So it starts driving up to the level above.
I had an experience that might be related, which was experiencing a big pattern in taking and sending, and then realizing that there was a secondary, like almost a sense of myself that existed in the shadow of that reactive emotion, and almost as, and I realized that it was the passive part of it. And really a part of the same,
yes.
But I didn't have the same feelings of otherness about it, you know. It seemed more, you know, I don't know.
You bring up a point here which I'm not sure that I mentioned explicitly, but it's very important. Every pattern has two poles, which I choose to call expressive and receptive. No, I active and passive don't quite precise. The very easy one to see, for instance, is the bully coward. The bully is the expressive and the coward is the receptive. Now, bully isn't the pattern, coward isn't the pattern. The pattern is bully coward. And when you push on a bully and make it impossible for him to be a bully, rather than him being bigger than you, then he becomes a coward. And when a coward encounters a situation that cowardice doesn't work, flips into bully. Which is one of the reasons why some of the weakest people become the most vicious torturers. You know, people weak inside become the most vicious torturers. So, when most of us in a reactive pattern identify primarily with either the expressive or the receptive pole, so we often think it was just the one side. But as you begin to work on the expressive pole, and it becomes more and more difficult for you to function in it, then you will flip and start behaving in exactly the opposite way. And what's important to understand here is that the pattern hasn't disappeared. You just picked up the train and reversed the things running on the same track. So when you start seeing this flip, now you've got to work on the other side, and the best way to do this is to hold the expressive and the receptive in attention at the same time. By doing that, you will bring attention to the emotional issue that is driving the pattern as a whole, and the split into these two forms of expression. That's too technical. Again.
No question about the second mental things. Can you name that all?
That's good enough for now.
I'm assuming it's going to be a very much of a
challenge. Yes.
Anyway. Things that I would like to two things about it, one is that if you use this pattern, that
Well, the key is that you're going to do this with something that you do, that at that moment you are experiencing as others. So, you're being consumed by jealousy. Now, when the reactive pattern or reactive emotion is up, we usually don't experience it. The energy of the reactive emotion is usually expressed in activity or something to the world, or it's repressed. So it's something to the body. Excuse me. When it's up, and you can feel that it's there, but you're still having difficulty really experiencing, like moving into the experience, then you regard it as, you're regarding it as something else, and you take. And that actually moves you into the experience. And you're taking experience, and not only the experience of emotion, but everything that's driving it underneath that comes to the taking. And you send to that same feeling of other, whatever it does. And one of the important points about sending is it does not have to call from the application. And many people get caught in the fact that you think, I'm taking this, now I can't figure out what to send. What you send is any experience of enjoyment, of valuing, being appreciated, that you know yourself, be it physical experience, the emotional experience, it doesn't matter. And a sense of accomplishment, sense of achievement, being appreciated, any of these things. We're talking about pleasant bodily sensations this morning. And this immediately connects you with something that is open. And where you tend to feel more present, right? And you send that into the emotion, say, the jealousy. And that's all you do. Here it is. You know, and this is what you're acting out in truth. And then the next breath to take in the experience. So in this exchange, you are moving into the experience of whatever arrives. Does that address those questions?
Yeah, it does. You may
have
seen that
the
reactive emotion comes up and you
yes, I think you're quite right. This is not beginning practice, so we're not teaching this to people as a way of working with stuff. It depends on a certain ability to maintain a certain level of awareness, and also to be aware of what they are actually experiencing and how they are experiencing. Those, I think, are important preconditions for being able to use this technique. But given those preconditions, it's very, very good. Okay.
In relation to this, the hard thing for me is that I keep the sending, I keep thinking of it as it's supposed to make the suffering feel better. But that's the purpose. And I don't know if that's really the purpose of it.
You do it with the feeling that it does, but you don't have to persuade the suffering. You know what you're sending. You know how it feels. That's what's important. And then you just give it. And the suffering does what it will with it. I mean, I've had people do taking one of the techniques I mentioned is to be taking and sending with yourself as a child or self. One woman I was working with, she said when she did this, the child would just sit there and refuse to participate. And so I said, it's not up to the child whether the child participates. You're going to take it, suffering, experience it. And you're going to send happiness, your own happiness, and it's going to experience it. You just do that. And so next time she did that, and she said, the image of the child just blew up into a thousand pieces, just like that, and something that won't hurt. And it's actually a way of connecting with that. And there's a part of her that's sitting inside like that. So when she said, no, this is just what's going to happen, but she couldn't hold on to that, it stopped facing her.
You're not trying to figure out what can I give this.
Absolutely, you don't try to figure out what you give, what you know. And you aren't trying to. Because once you do that, you're caught. Now you're in negotiation with the pattern.
Yeah.
And you know how that ends up. You know, the pattern says, well, I'd like that, but not quite that, just a little bit less. And you know, okay, I got to get this just right. And that's the kind of thing that the pattern will do, right? So don't get into that. Listen.
But in that same vein, my experience is that one thing might feel more right to hear that, and I don't know if I'm negotiating that, but finding something I feel can make sense.
Well, and that's the issue. Finding something you can connect with yourself. Because that's the point in the sentence, is that these are things you connect with yourself. And so you can't hold a negative self-image when you have this positive experience in you. And people have difficulty finding something that they connect with because they're so entrenched in the negative self-image. Oh, I wouldn't go through a process. I would just go straight forward. You know, when it comes to patterns, I don't believe in the chilly shadow. You know, you've had pleasant experiences in your life, right? Just go right there. And you know, well, I can't feel any of them right now. No, now you've got something else to be taking and sending. You follow?
Yeah.
Okay.
In that same vein, it seems like in a process of taking and sending, either the taking is stronger and the sending is sort of just happening, but not as vivid a match, or vice versa. Is that?
I think that's what happens, and what I'm suggesting is make them equal. And actually work at making them equal, so you're experiencing them with equal intensity. And the more that I work with this myself and work with people in it, the more important that aspect seems to be. Jonathan?
I think I'm
going to
have a very interesting discussion.
Speak a little bit louder.
Opening the barriers.
In what you thought were pleasant experiences, there was a very pain.
Well, there was a funny way.
Okay, yes, yes.
Let's just say, I'll share something that's personal. sort of split from a present experience into an object space. And it all depends on the other. But I'm just wondering if you can
comment. I'm not sure what there is. If I understand you correctly, when you started sending the experience of being appreciated, you discovered how much you yearned for. Now you aren't doing taking and sending. You aren't taking the appreciation. You're taking the pain of yearning.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But any experience, when you bring attention to it, and you're experiencing it completely pleasant or unpleasant, if there's a reactive component in it, then you're going to discover the next layer down. And yes, it may flip over to one side. So what? That's what happens.
Is the same thing happening if you feel something and have mixed feelings about it?
Yeah, and sometimes you can be taking
things
that are
so simple.
That's very painful, and then you discover, you know, actually, I pretty appreciated the whole experience. And you go the other way.
So you just send it then, send the appreciation.
You know, send the experience of having met with challenge.
So it's not the object, it's the appreciation or the
experience. You work with exactly what you experience. That's what's important. This is about connecting with what you experience. Paul? Yeah? Lakshya Drumma is the forename of Michael Lakshya. Lakshya is the place, and Drum is the word land. And when she was very young, because of her expertise to the facility for learning how to read and understand so quickly, she was called Little, and she was small, she was called Little Land. And then I think it was Lama Sloan, who was the main teacher of Lama Trapa, the local teacher that she studied with. I think it's Lama Sloan, because she came from the region called Lak, that we will call it Lakshya Drumma, the land of Lak. That prayer song was written by Karma Chakne, who is a 18th century teacher, maybe in 17th, the Kagyu Nyingma tradition.
He wrote some commentaries on
He wrote the text. He wrote a lot of stuff. One that's been translated and published under several different titles is The Union of Mahamudra and Dzogchen, which is a very detailed commentary on Chenrezig meditation. And he also was the teraphim that he revealed the text, and the whole Amitabha cycle comes through him, as well as the Vajrakalaya cycle and a bunch of other stuff that I don't know about. And this prayer was one that we used in the 3-year retreat when we were doing a month of practice at Chuk, which is we practice chill all through the retreat, but then we do this very long ceremony of chill, which has much more complicated than the very simple one that we get. It's true. And it's much more complicated. You have, I would say, everything that we did and as many other visualizations and sections, again, if not twice more. So, yeah, it's complicated. And this, for whatever reason, that prayer was put as the open prayer, as the lineage prayer. And I just really liked it. So I translated it for one of my students some time ago. And George said, why don't we put this? I said, yeah, that sounds fine. And one of the things, if any of you are so inclined, is you can actually use it as a guru yoga based on much of love. You could use it as a practice that stands in its own right. Or you could use it to get into the mood for trip, if you want. Or you could just read it, because there's a lot of nice teaching. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I could go over that if people are interested. But maybe there are other questions first. Yes, Peter.
Yeah. A couple of basic things I was having help direct Doris approach. One was, because each can be visualized myself as a child or other people or maybe all of that being some way that it was to create, to take the abstract other and have a particular vision. I ended up with colored shapes struck by fancy.
So what you're saying is you thought you needed a form to do the taking and sending.
Yeah,
And whereas this approach to taking and sending is just really direct with what's being experienced. So if you find yourself needing a form or generating a form, then it's more appropriate for you to do taking sending with a person or something being, or doing it in one of the six realms or something like that, to give it a concrete form. And that's not going to diminish the effectiveness of the practice, but that's going to be the technique that's going to work better for you. Well, actually, I recommend you don't go back and forth. I recommend that you do what works for you. And because going back and forth...
That's not a good thing.
No, it really isn't.
Right, okay.
Well, yes, I think so. Particularly when people have difficulty connecting with what they're feeling. Now, they know that they're in pain, but they can't really connect with any of the emotional stuff because they're painless. They're shut down. So stick them in front, and now there's the person, and they find it easier to actually connect with what they're feeling by imagining it in another person. Tell that quite a bit without the people. When there's something they can't experience directly, then by imagining this duplicate them from, then you see that the person's unhappy, okay. They're unhappy, things like that. And something starts to open up.
So it's a little bit the English compassion that you're suffering with is actually a more accurate description.
Well, the Tibetan word for compassion is Nyingje, and it means noble heart. That's really what that's a little meaning. and it could depend on the quality of, you know, not the word we use very much anymore, but noble. Not really like that. It is that there is a whole. You have a strength and presence as a noble that allows you to be completely with and unintimidated by what arises in experience. In one Ajahn Khandra, you know, when we were doing a retreat with us in Los Angeles, somebody asked him, what does compassion mean? And his immediate reply was fearlessness.
Is it possible that this could be what we're doing by this point in the sequence of exchange?
That's how I tend to interpret it, yes. I think that's, it was this process that sequence was pointing to, and they frame it in terms of past, and, you know, all the stuff you're going to experience in the future, but it's really what you aren't able to experience now.
The future is based on
that. That's exactly right. So, and it's out of those kinds of considerations that I've encouraged people to use statements and to get in touch with what they're experiencing first. But when you can stay in that, then you can really begin to take on the stuff. Mark that question.
Yeah, with this rest, when there's that giving and taking, and found that I can go into both the fields as private, and then find it in balance. And I work on it for a while, then I fall out of attention. When I come back, I would have that in balance immediately. In attention, I don't know if I would go through both the fields.
If you're falling out of the attention, it means you aren't keeping the sense of presence there. You're collapsing down onto just the taking and sending, and there's a decay of attention there. So when you're doing that taking and sending with that direct awareness approach, then you keep the sense of the whole as you're working. That's important. Well,
so when you fall out,
then
you start that.
I think that would be better to do, yes.
I had the experience in doing the direct awareness. I had a pretty fruitful experience with it because I found that what arose in that clearing, you know, when I creating that, bringing the internal material into the, and then what emerged was things that I wasn't so clear about, didn't know, and I was very surprised by a couple of things that came up, and I found that the way it tended to work for me though was when that happened, what I would be sending was the sort of the presence of the field in a way. And where I would get into trouble is when I started to kind of like let go of that and try to do taking and sending, like that somehow was too much. But I found that sending the presence of the field worked because it
kept you in touch with the field.
Yeah, and because it was also a reminder of how the pattern was not real and was a projection. You know, I could really feel it kind of, you know, coming and going, you know, engaging and not pushing it back. Anyway, that was my experience.
I had something happen where I was working on one thing and then something else came up, and as I was taking and sending with that and the emotion of that, I began to feel like I could see the other people's side of the situation, and it kind of broke the solidity of that emotion. So I was a bit perplexed because I hadn't experienced that before, you know, and I wondered if I was getting too caught in the story of it.
Not at all. In fact, that happens because by experiencing your own pain completely, then you become free of the limitations imposed by it. So now you can actually see more. And I've recommended in relationships when one person is having, says, you know, my husband and I are getting along and fighting with my wife all the time, I sometimes suggest that in their meditation they sit down and put their spouse right in front of them. Because if there's difficulty on one side of the relationship, there's usually difficulty on the other. And so I say, you're here, and put your spouse right in front of you, and take from your spouse to something that you feel he or she may be experiencing. Just do that, and give them what you value and appreciate in the relationship. And often it just allows people to see the problem from the other person's perspective, and they go, oh, yeah, I mean, geez, I feel pretty miserable. And it opens up a whole another avenue of dialogue that wasn't there before. So, I mean, these are very specific applications which I haven't ever read about in that effect, but they work. I don't look at courses and know all of them.
So when that happens, do you stay with that situation, or are you kind of done?
Well, if it happens spontaneously in your practice, I would rest in the openness. What I'm talking about is how there's actual problems in that situation. You can use it to open yourself up to a more complete experience of what's going on, because you're locked, basically you're locked into your own projection. That's the way of dismantling your own projection. Other things?
Yes. I find that when I'm
yes, it's called the muddy transmission. Well, when he hears about something or tries something, particularly if you do it in the presence of the person instructing or guiding you, there's an energy there. And that energy is utilized a lot in Tibetan Buddhism particularly in order to plant seeds of experience in students. But even without that, you know, you read about something in the book and think, oh, that's an interesting thing, and try that. It works wonderfully. And they sit down next time, well, it doesn't work quite as well. And the third time you sit down, it's just about the same. Well, what's happening is that the reactor, when it works, attention moves deeper in you. And when attention moves deeper in you, reactive patterns arise in order to dissipate that attention. That is the primary function of, not the primary function, the only function of reactive patterns. They arise to dissipate attention. And so by the time it's the third time, they've learned how to do this. And that's where the work begins, where it's your intention versus the pattern's operation. Well,
corral them.
Yeah, there's all of that, but there's also subtle techniques you can work with. And if you study how the pattern consumes your attention, you can then figure out how to work with it effectively. Now, some patterns, they terrorize you. That method was one student I had who, whenever she had a form of work in which she was just giving to people. She was very, very good at it. But when she tried to do anything for herself, what came up in her head is, if you do this, you're going to get sick, or you're going to be fired, or you're going to, this. And the more that she was moving in that direction, the worse the messages came up. And so she'd back off. And I raised the prospect that this might just be a pattern.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.